Blog Talk Radio.
Sweet.
This is Entertainment Life on the Sasha Marina Show, a show about the entertainment and music industry, where you get to hear from the top and up-and-coming stars, from amateurs to professionals. They're all just working hard for success. This show is to give those the opportunity to speak about their talents and what they're doing to succeed in their dreams. And now, here's your host, Sasha Marina.
Hello, hello everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in today. You're listening to the Sasha Marina Show, and I'm your host, Sasha Marina. Today I have a very, very cool guest. She's with us here in America, but this is not where she's come from, a land not so far away, but that we're all very fond of. And her name is Emma Barrett. And she's a, you know, she came here with a lot of big dreams, and you know what? She's just so close to really accomplishing it, and I see her right now. I kind of just was whipping through Facebook, and I saw her page, and I was like, "Whoa, let me check her out." She has a large following, and right now she's working on a short film, Take the Reins, and you know, it seemed so interesting, and I really felt like sharing her story. So, without further ado, I'm gonna have her on live with us all. Hi, Emma. How are you?
Hi, Sasha. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Okay, great. So, Emma, let's start a little bit about you. Who is Emma Barrett? Tell us a little bit about your journey thus far as an actress. And I know you're dipping into the whole filmmaking industry right now, but how has it been for you as an actress, as an artist overall?
Well, I came to the States 3 years ago. I spent 2 years in New York and then moved to Los Angeles a year ago now. And, I mean, it's been an amazing journey. It's been really challenging, but it's, you know, I came to the United States because I wanted to be in an industry where the sky was the limit. You know, I didn't want to stay in Australia and kind of reach a ceiling and then have to move to the States and start all over again from square one. So even though it is more challenging, I just feel that the United States just has, you know, so much more to offer in the long term, you know.
So you feel there's definitely more opportunity here and what you're seeking to do?
Yeah, I do. I mean, Australia produces some amazing films. I mean, some of my favorite films are Australian films. But we just don't have the same, you know, the industry doesn't mm-hmm. have the same funding and the same support, because Australia is kind of a sporty country, and that's what, that's where the focus is. It's not so much in the arts. So, but I hopefully that will change around, because I think Australians are really great filmmakers, so.
And not only that, they're very great actors. I mean, we have a lot of great Australian actors here in the United States and in our American film industry. So
no, that's so true. I mean, some of my favorite actors are Australians. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, congratulations on that. I guess you should be very proud of that. speak to us now about your filmmaking career. What is this project that I want to mention it and really emphasize it, because I know you're doing a Kickstarter and you're trying to reach a goal by a certain amount of time. So how did you come about to wanting to create this film, and what is it all about?
The film is about disconnection, and I hope to inspire connection, because I just feel that with all you know, the technology and the social media, I just feel that people are, you know, feeling more and more lonely and disconnected, even though, you know, we're all connecting into this, you know, this network, these networks online. And I think what I want with this film is to show that, you know, a connection is not the same thing as a bond. And if we want to, you know, if we want real human connection in our lives, then we have to put the phone down or put the iPad or the laptop away and take risks and really, you know, be prepared to show vulnerability and have that be okay, you know, because it's, if we try to hide behind this wall of our Facebook and like this thing that we can control. I mean, we can control everything on our Facebook, and we can control how people see us, and that's not real, because the thing about human beings is that we are imperfect, and that's what makes us beautiful, and that's what should connect us. So I just feel like we should be prepared to just let down, you know, all the barriers and all the show that we put on for each other every day.
Now that you mentioned that, do you feel that our generation of artists, maybe, you know, let's say mine, because I'm in my 21. Do you feel that our generation of artists have lost somewhat our value and artisticness because of this, because of the social media and because of the vanity that's out there and all the glamorous and everything has to be so pretty and you have to create your own style and everything has to be so eccentric? Do you think that we've lost somewhat of that artistic value in this generation because of what's going on right now?
I don't think we've lost it. I mean, I think it's all actually for the first time. I mean, it's all at our fingertips. I mean, and it's more accessible. I mean, anybody can, you know, like things like photography and filmmaking with technology have just become so much more accessible to everyone, you know. But I feel that, you know, we have to decide how to use the machines in our lives and not let the machines in our lives control us, you know.
Okay, I see. And you're right about that, because I feel that kids nowadays, that maybe a kid before at 14 couldn't take video and maybe couldn't really put his dream, even if it was just on YouTube. And now kids everywhere, you see the dumbest videos. But you know what? Some people really enjoy making videos and posting them. And even if it's that just that much closer to being a director or whatever it is they want to do, they're putting it out there and it's so accessible to people to see their work, even if it's just as dumb as a YouTube video. So I think
exactly.
That, you know, that does play a part, like you say.
Exactly. But I think we still have to live as well, you know. I think, like,
okay.
Going everywhere, we come home, we have our laptop, you know, you go out, you have your phone, and like, you know, people, you go out to dinner with friends, and, you know, you've got like 5 or 6 of you at a dinner table, and there's like moment, and I'm like guilty of this myself, I'm not criticizing my friends,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, you have moments where everybody at the table is looking down, checking their phones, and it's like, hang on a second, why are we all out to dinner together? Like, we could all be at home, you know, on Facebook or texting each other. Like, and I just think then there's, you know, maybe we need to be a little bit less available, you know, like the whole text message thing and like, you know, people getting angry if you don't reply within, you know, the first 10 minutes. And, you know, I'm not looking at my phone every second of every day, and that should be okay, you know.
Okay, so let's bring it back to you, Emma. How I like the little story, because I was looking through your website, and on your blog, you tell a story of how when you realized what was it that you wanted to be in life, you know, the whole situation with your mother. Can you elaborate more on that? When was that precise moment in your life that you felt and you knew that you wanted to take the artistic road?
Oh, my God, that was so funny. Well, yeah, I was 10 years old, and my mom and I were having a fight. And because she'd caught me out on a lie. And so, she was yelling at me, and I was, you know, a very dramatic and moody child. So, you know, I turn around and I go to storm up the stairs, and my mom yells out at the top of her lungs. She says, "Emma Barrett, you are such a brilliant liar. You should be, you know, I think you'd be a brilliant actress." And I stopped on the stairs. It was like somebody had shot me in the back, you know. It's like nothing in my life up until that point had made any sense, and then for some reason this made sense, And then I stopped, and it was hilarious because usually, you know, I'm making this big dramatic exit, and then I stop and I turn around and I said, yeah, I could do that. I could do that well. And then all these years later, I still haven't changed my mind. So I guess I have my mom to thank for that.
Okay. And did you begin doing theater and stuff like that in Australia?
Yeah. So I went to acting school the first time around when I was 16 and 17. So I'd go to high school during the day and I'd do acting school at night time. But I was in class with people in their 20s and 30s and 40s. And, you know, I was 16 and 17. And it got to scene work in final semester when I had directors asking me, because I've always been tall, so I was always cast in, you know, roles that were older than
mm-hmm.
how my age then. So I would have, you know, directors say to me, you know, Emma, why would you make that choice for that character? And I'm thinking, well, you know, how would I know? Like, she's in her 20s, she's fallen in love, she doesn't live with her parents. Like, I was still in high school living with my parents. I hadn't lived. I wanted to go and mm-hmm. get my heart broken and make some mistakes and, you know, just have something to draw from. So that's when I decided to, I took a break and decided to professionally for a few years because I danced my whole life. And so, okay. So that's when I moved to Paris to pursue my dream as a dancer first before starting acting.
And you say that about 3 years ago. Ever since you moved from home, were you in Paris, and was that right before you came to the States?
I left mm-hmm. Australia almost 7 years ago now. So even mm-hmm. though I still have my accent, but I was on cruise ships. I was working on cruise ships for a year, and then after that I moved to Paris and I was dancing at the Moulin Rouge, and then I was in Paris for about 2.5 years, and then. And then I moved to New York after that to go back to acting school again, just a refresher course. So I went back to a full-time conservatory in New York at Atlantic, which is David Mamet's school. And that was cool. I mean, that was intense and great. And then after that, I worked towards getting my work visa, and then I moved to Los Angeles.
Okay. I want to go back real quick to the accent thing. Don't even worry about it. You know, Salma Hayek has been in our film industry for years, and that woman will not drop that accent, not even if they trained her. She has that
great
accent. But you know what? At the end of the day, that makes you who you are, and we love it. So that's awesome.
Absolutely.
And, you know, when was it that I'm just so curious, you leave your homeland to go to Paris to pursue a dream, and then from Paris, you know, you come here, you know, to keep pursuing your dream. At any point in that journey did you doubt yourself? Was there any instance that you were about to give up, or were you just that kind of person that just kept pushing yourself to the limit?
I think doubting yourself is a natural part of it. Absolutely, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially moving to Paris, I didn't have a job. I didn't speak the language. I spoke maybe 5 phrases, you know, that I'd
mm-hmm.
learned in like a Rosetta Stone or something. I didn't have any friends or family, and I decided to buy a one-way ticket to Paris, and I was just like, I'm going to make it happen, because I'd auditioned in Australia, and I didn't get it, because I wasn't flexible enough, because I had an injury that I had to work through, so yeah, that was crazy. I mean, like, everyone told me I was crazy, everyone asked me, you know, what if you don't get it, what are you going to do, like, you don't speak the language, you don't know anybody, and I just was like, I'm going to, I'll figure it out. You know, it's going to be okay. And it was kind of one of those moments. I landed on the tarmac in Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris, and I looked out the window, and I just see, like, it was all gray and just raining and, like, horrible. And I just looked out the window, and I thought, what the hell am I doing? Like, it really didn't dawn on me until the plane landed in Paris, which is good. I mean, because if it had happened any sooner, I, you know, wouldn't want that to stop me getting on the plane. But, yeah, definitely. I mean, and you know what? I didn't get the job straight away. I got there in January 2008, and I didn't start working at the Moulin Rouge until October 2008. So, and I didn't have I didn't have enough money saved to last me that whole time. So I got another job in another cabaret where I got to practice my can-can and, you know, work on my flexibility. So yeah, I mean, I think the whole insecurity thing, it's all part of it, you know. It's just like how you react to that and what you do with that, I think.
Okay. And now that you've dabbed, you know, and thus far in your life, that you've dabbed into those both worlds as a dancer, as a professional dancer, and now as, you know, as an actress, you've had your training, you're somewhat considered a professional at this point. Which one do you believe that is a bit harder to pursue as a professional?
You mean, like, dancing or acting?
As an exactly.
I think they're equally as hard. I mean, I think I don't think dreams are meant to be easy. You know, I think I think that's what makes them so much more rewarding when you do make it. It's like because you've worked hard and you've got through, you know, you've got through the hard times and you've battled your own doubts and insecurities and but yeah, I mean, acting and filmmaking is a huge challenge. It's intense, but I think if it were easy, then it wouldn't be worth doing.
Okay. So let's go back to speaking about your project. I really want to support this because I know that you're with your whole Kickstarter campaign, you really want to reach your goal. Is there anything that you would like to elaborate on to let us know, you know, what would we be receiving and, you know, in light of helping your project and so forth?
So I've got until the 13th of December to raise the money. And the way that Kickstarter works is that if you don't reach your target, your target for your budget, then you actually lose everything. So it's a lot of pressure. But I think that, you know, everyone deserves a chance, and I think that given the chance, that I'm going to be able to produce something that's going to help people and inspire people to connect and to you know, to show vulnerability and to promote, you know, love and human connection again, and that's something that I feel that could make the world, you know, a better place. And I think that's what we should do in our work. You know, and no matter what industry you're in, no matter what you do, I think that we should all be trying to, in whatever way we can, make the world a better place. So, yeah, that's what I really want to do. And this is a true story as well. I mean, the story of my film is a sad one, but I'm hoping that, you know, I'm hoping that it inspires good things, and I'm hoping that this girl who it's about a girl who actually, a true story about a girl who committed suicide on Facebook, and all her friends just ignored her, the note that she left saying goodbye, and they ignored her and laughed at her, and you know, some of them even lived within walking distance of her house, and then she was found. She was found dead the next day, and this is a horrible and tragic story. And I'm using her story because I hope that she hasn't died in vain. I'm hoping that this story can be a way to hold up a mirror to society and say, this is what we've become. you know, we've gotten to this point that, you know, that the people within walking distance of her house couldn't even tear themselves away from their Facebook to walk around and see if she was okay. And there's something about that that just breaks my heart. And that's why I feel so compelled to make this film, because I think there's too much of that kind of thing happening. And I just, you know, where everybody's feeling lonely and disconnected, but nobody wants to kind of take the risk and put themselves out there to change that. So I feel that if people, you know, all do it together, then it's not going to seem as scary, and you're not going to take the leap, and there won't be a net there, you know.
Okay, I see what you mean, and you know, you're right. The social network and social media as a whole really has its pros and its cons, and it's from extreme to extreme. It could be great, and it can be very negative. So in this case, we're going to use it as a great motive to help you raise your full full goal and your Kickstarter. You know, we're just going to really see, and it's really great, you know, to spread messages. I had an experience a couple of weeks ago of a friend I went to high school with. His name was Oscar, and he's a football player. He had an incident at a music festival, and he sadly passed away, and we created a whole movement that was called Smile for Oscar, and it targeted a lot of people worldwide even worldwide that are into the electronic music and stuff like that, started tweeting and supporting the whole thing and donating money to the family so they can, you know, do his funeral. So again, it can be used positive and negatively, but in this case, you know, as much as we use it more positive, then I think that would be a better reward.
Do you know, I was actually at that music festival.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually ties in to my story as well. I actually wrote a blog post about that weekend, because there were two people that died at the festival that weekend, and the third day of the festival was cancelled, and just the comments on Twitter and Facebook about people complaining about, you know, are they going to get their refunds, and you know, this mm-hmm. is crap that they have to lose their last day of partying, and it broke my heart in such a way that I can't quite explain, and I think this film is a way for me to kind of work from that pain and make it something positive, you know, because I don't want to give up on humanity, because I think that there's so many beautiful things in this world, and yeah, I really want to use these things as an example, not to highlight, you know, how bad things are, but just to highlight how bad things really could get, and it's not too late to change.
You're right. So, Emma, we're reaching our end of the show here. I'd like to thank you so much for your time and your insight and so forth. Before we go, though, can you tell people where they can find you, your sites, your most used social networks, and where they can find your Kickstarter campaign so they can go support your project?
Yes, absolutely. So my website is emmabarrett.com, which is two M's, two R's, and two T's. So the Kickstarter, if you go to kickstarter.com and you type in Take the Reins, you'll be able to find my project there. Also, if you go to Facebook, and my username for my Facebook page is Emma Los Angeles, and the same as Twitter as well, Emma Los Angeles, all one word. But also if you go to my page, emmabarrett.com, there's a link there that can take you straight to my Kickstarter page from there.
Okay, perfect. So once again, Emma, thank you so much for your time, and I appreciate that, and I wish you continued luck and success with this project that you have coming up.
Thank you so much, Sasha. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem. You have a good... Oh, happy holidays, by the way. Happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, yes. Happy Thanksgiving. thank you.
Enjoy.
Okay, bye, Sasha.
Bye-bye.